Today's daf in Masechet Bechorot, brought to you from right here within the walls of Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Zayin. And we're holding on the second line, right at the first word. And we're about to bring a raya to a question that we asked yesterday. Let's just remember what we're referring to. We have a machloket over here between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Shimon about what the din is of what appears to be a non-kosher animal that is a mutation in a fetus that was born from a kosher animal. So according to the Rabbanan, we dafka say that such a thing is mutter, as the Mishnah said, ayotzei min ha-tahor tahor, and ayotzei min ha-tamei is tamei. And we darshan that from the gamal who. Either it is a gamal or not, but if it's not a real gamal, as described in the pasuk, then it's mutter. Whereas according to Rabbi Shimon, the double lashon of gamal comes to tell me even something that looks like a gamal, even though it isn't a gamal, is considered to be tamei. Fine. Now, that is one set of limudim. We also had the question of the interrelationship between the mother and child when it comes to bechorot. So over there we had bechor shor, bechor kesef, bechor eis. Everybody agrees that you have to have hu shor and the vlad shor. In other words, if it's a mutation, then it's not considered to be a chiyuv in bechorah. However, over there it says ach halak. According to Rabban, it's a different machlok. The Rabban and Rabbi Shimon. Do you mechayev bechorah in a case where it has miktzat simanim that makes it similar to the mother? That's how the Rabbanan understand ach halak. According to Rabbi Shimon, it has to have rosh over rumo, similar to the mother, before there's a chiyuv of bechorah. Okay, now, question is, how does that later definition refer in Rabbi Shimon, how does it apply rather to achila? Because he didn't say anything about mixed money when it came to achila. And it may indeed be different, because remember, when it comes to the Bechor, the idea over here is the mother and the child have to be the same species. So over there, you can say, okay, if they don't look like each other essentially, Barosha Varuva, then they're not the same. It's not Hushar Vladar Shar. But when it comes to the Isser is derived from the extra Gamal, which means this too is a camel, but maybe if it's somewhat different than a camel, and it looks like its mother that is kosher in some small way, it's not really a camel. So maybe over there Rabbi Shimon relaxes his standards. When it comes to achila, you would say even miktzat simanim is sufficient for achila. That was our question yesterday. Today we'd like to bring our first raya to this halacha. Toshma. Behima tehora sheyalda min behima timea. So here it says, our case. So you have an animal that is tahor. The child is a type of behima timea. It says here, it's asur ba'achila. Now, asur ba'achila, of course, is only true according to Rabbi Shimon. Because according to the Rabbanan, ayotzei min ha-tahor tahor, right? So this represents the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, and it goes right along and says, ve'im domero shoveru bo le'imo, chayav bevchora. So mashma, I mean, we started talking about eating, and then we've moved on to discuss bechora, but I mean, at this point, the Gemara assumes it's the same thing, and we're just sort of making things simple by not belaboring the point. We put everything together in a simple way. Here it's ozer b'achila, but you should know the other way, it's chayev, meaning bechora and b'achila, and that way we've concentrated the information, assuming that bechora and achila are the same. So shmamima, therefore the implication is that l'achila nami by Rabbi Shimon Rosh Veruba. Over here Rabbi Shimon seems to be saying you need Rosh Veruba. Says him on the contrary. If anything, it's the opposite. It's dafka for the Bechora, which we already know, that he requires Rosh Veruba, and indeed that makes sense according to the Pasuk. And look, I mean, dekanami, that seems very much to be implied by the change in the tone of the Braitha. We started talking about achila, and all of a sudden we're starting to talk about Bechora. So apparently, it's only for Bechora that Rabbi Shimon requires Rosh Veruba. The Bechora, who to buy Rabbi Shimon Rosh Veruba, but indeed for Achila, Bedafka, you could bring a riot from a year that low. He does not require Rosh Veruba, just as we suspected, because if it's not quite a Gamal, then it would be Mutter. Says Gemara, well, I mean, yes, I understand what you're saying, but it's not persuasive. You may be right. I obviously can't prove that you're not right, but I could say that there's another explanation for the switch in the Braita. I could claim that Leolam Emelach Lachila Nami, boy, that in fact, the din of Rosh and Verubo is true across the board, both for Achila and for Bechora. The reason that it switches to Bechora in the Seifa is because it's a bigger Kiddush, not the way you thought, that it's a lesser, it's a bigger Kiddush for Bechora, because I might have thought that it's not even enough to have Rosh HaVeruba. That's the point when it comes to Bechor. Yitzra. Saka Daivach Amina. I mean, what's the basis, according to Rabbi Shimon? The basis is, Ach Bechor Shor. What we learn of Achie Hu Shor, the Bechoro Shor. So since it writes that, oh, Vechdiv Ach Bechor Shor, Achie Hu Shor, Bechoro Shor, that implies that they need to be the same. In which case, Lo Tazkele Berosh HaVeruba. Maybe in that case, Rabbi Shimon wouldn't even have accepted a similarity, even Rosh HaVeruba. Because the point over here is, I want you to look alike. Hushar Bechoroshar. So you need the whole thing. Mashen came by Gamal. Maybe over there, you're right. Rosh HaVeruba would be sufficient, but not less than Rosh HaVeruba. So therefore, Kamash Malan, maybe the bride has come to tell me that Rosh HaVeruba is enough. I don't know, but I certainly am not ready to buy into this being a riot to the opposite of what we've had. Okay, how about this? Tashma. Ach et ze lo tochlu mi ma'ale hagera u mi mafrisei haparsa et hagama. Okay, so we stress in this braita the word ze. Ze lo tochlu, nor ze iata ochel. You cannot eat this, meaning the gamal, aval ata ochel haba besiman echad. You could eat something that looks a little bit like a kosher animal where its mother is kosher. So this is referring to, clearly, a shita of Rabbi Shimon. Because otherwise, I mean, what are we talking about? You know, what do you mean? It looks like Baba Siman Echad. What is that supposed to mean? Obviously, we're talking about where its mother is dissimilar from it. So it's a gamal, but it's a gamal that came from a kosher mother. And if it's similar to the mother in some way, and it's not totally gamal-like, then you can eat it. According to Rabbanu, you can eat it even if it's totally gamal-like. So this has got to be Rabbi Shimon, who holds that an animal that comes from a tahor could still be called tamei from the double lashon gamal. And it's telling me that Abba Siman Echad is enough. So what are we referring to? Continues the bright of Ezeze. Abba Siman Echad. What do we mean by that? This is a tamei that is nolad min hatahor. Of course, referring to a case where the father was also a tahor animal. That you can eat. Yochol afilu iburo min hatamei. You might think even if it was impregnated by a non-kosher animal. And later on we're going to ask, how is this possible? Because actually we have a klal that a non-kosher animal cannot possibly impregnate a kosher animal. Well, let's take it now at face value. Talmud Lomar. Therefore the Torah stresses ksavim. It has to be plural ksavim. In other words, father and mother must both be a kesef. Ache aviv keves v'imo kifsa. So says Rabbi Yoshua. So it's according to him, even though it's usur if it's a yotzi min ha-tahor, but it's mutter if it's doimeh b'simen echad, meaning with simen echad not referring to kashrus or non-kashrus, but referring to some similarity. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, why would I need a pasuk to tell me what I already know is kosher? I mean, if it's similar to the mother, and both parents are kosher, what havamina would there be that it wouldn't be kosher? Lo ba katuv lahatir ta mutar. The Torah's not coming to tell me something I know is mutter is mutter. It's coming to now expand the envelope of what's mutter. Elo lo hosif ala mutar. And what therefore must it be referring to? On the contrary, it's got to be coming to matir even where the father is tamei. And if you try to tell me that no, if the father is min ha-tahor, that it would still be usur if the child itself appears to be related to a tamei, no, your pasuk is wrong. When you were derish from ksavim, that both need to be a kesef, and it's only being matir here, iburo min ha-tahor, Talmud lomar shor. This, of course, the idea of shor over here is completely unnecessary and not part of what we're talking about. Take out shor and just say se ksavim, se izim. That we'll see later on. It's from the repetition of se se. is mikol makom. It's whatever parts it is, it's sufficient, and that is enough. It does point out a little bit funny because they're referring to opposite drushes. One is dashing the ksavim, one is referring to the set, and it's funny to say, pasuk isn't coming for this, it's coming for that. But, I mean, the truth is, look, it is the same pasuk, so it's not that bad. But in any event, what do we see in this discussion between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua? We see that they're calling an animal tamei because of the fact that it looks tamei. The question over here is whether this slight resemblance in simanim, siman echad, meaning mitzvah simanim, is sufficient to be matred, even if the father is not kosher. That's all that we see. But in essence, we can refer to an animal that is from kosher parents as tamei. So that is Rabbi Shimon Shita, correct? And that means that Rabbi Shimon Shita would nonetheless accept mikzah simonim, as it's saying over here, korele tamei, which is k'Rabbi Shimon, v'ka'ama, and nonetheless it says that ata ochela babi siman echad, you can accept a little bit of similarity between the mother and child to eat. And that means he doesn't need rosh v'ruba. There's your answer. Says the Gemara, well, it's your answer according to this Tana who holds like Rabbi Shimon. Yes, but it's not your answer according to Rabbi Shimon. Because remember that there are two issues in the Machlokas, Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbana. One had to do with Gomel Gomel. In other words, is there an Isser of eating a child that is Nidma to another Min? When the other question is whether, even in the case of Bechor, where everybody agrees, do you need Rosh of Aruba, or is Mitzvah Simonim enough with the Ach Chalak? So this particular Tana may agree with Rabbi Shimon when it comes to Gama Gama, but that doesn't mean that he has any agreement with Rabbi Shimon when it comes to needing Rosh of Aruba. He may accept Mitzvah Simonim, in which case, by Achila, he's also accepting Mitzvah Simonim. But when it comes to Rabbi Shimon, who we know argues about Mitzvah Simonim, Lagabi Bechor, maybe he would argue about Mitzvah Simonim about Achila as well. Therefore, it could well be that Haitan is Sofer Lakavate Bechoda. He holds of one inyan about Rabbi Shimon, namely, Gomel Gomel, that even if it comes from kosher animals, it's usur to eat, but he's Poligalei Bechoda. Maybe he argues on the other element, and there he agrees with the Rabban, and the Mitzvah Simonim is quite enough, and you don't need Rosh HaVeruba. Now, actually, you can have actually a motive. There's some who first address this braita on its own by asking, how is it possible? Then they come to explain how it's possible, and as a result of explaining how it's possible, they have a much stronger indication that it's going like Rabbi Shimon, and then they come to bring the raya, and that is as follows. Some are first questioning the braita and then explaining it. And they read like this. You said that its iburo was impregnated by a tamei. How is that possible? Mimi Abra, would it in fact conceive? The Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, did not Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi point out that there is no such thing? That whether the male or the female is of a different type. So one is Torah and one is tamei, forget it. You're not going to get conception, ever. Or if the male and female are different types, small animal or large animal. So you're talking about bovines versus sheep, let's say, or goats. There's no such thing as a mixed pregnancy there. And there's no such thing either as mixing a behema from a chaya or a chaya from the behema. Although on that last piece, you do find one particular shita, and that's Rabbi Eliezer and the whole discussion there about koi, umachlukuto, who believe that there is such a thing as a chaya that can be mitaberet from a behema. But whatever, certainly this nobody argues about. And behema, tamea from a behema tahara, there is no such animal. And you say, what would be the din if its father was tamei? And Rabbi Yirmiyah explained, well, obviously it doesn't mean its father was genetically tamei. Genetically, it has to be the same species. And otherwise, you were not for conception. We're talking about visually, and it's referring to a kalut ben parat. So it's an animal that does not have parsatov prusot. So there's a mutation, which is rather common, where you have a fusing of the bones. They don't separate out into that double Prasot, Mafeset Parsa, that you have in the mother. So the child is born with a leg that basically is of a non-kosher animal. And we're going according to Rabbi Shimon, who holds that that's called Tamei. And that's what we meant when we said Tamei. Ah, now continues the Gemara. But, I mean, the Ka'amar. Now note that it says over here, even though it's going, I'll leave it to Rabbi Shimon. But if it looks like its mother, you can eat it. There you go. So that proves, according to Rabbi Shimon, you don't need Rosh HaVeruva. And again, we say the same answer we said before. This Tana doesn't completely agree about this issue with Rabbi. He only agrees about the Gamal Gamal. He doesn't agree about Rosh HaVeruva. He holds Mitzvah Simanim is enough. Now, before we get on to bring the next Raya, definitive Raya, actually, for Rabbi Shimon, we'd like to examine this sugya a little bit more. Because when you're talking over here about whether you need to have both parents be of the same mean, or whether one can be of a non-kosher species, doesn't that boil down to the question of Zev Zeh Goreim? In other words, you only get a child by combining the germ cells of male and female. So if one of them is not kosher, so then you're dealing with a question of Zev Zeh Goreim. By the way, we did refer to this sugya back in Chulin with a whole different language, and that was the question of whether Choshishin L'Zera'av or not Choshishin L'Zera'av. And those who says that, Choshishin L'Zera'av is where you don't have kosher or not kosher. When you have there, you don't deal with the issue of Zev Zeh Goreim. Where you have kosher, non-kosher, then it would be Zev Zeh Goreim. But, as Tosfos himself points out, still doesn't make any sense. If ain't kosher l'zera ha'av, then there's no Zev Zeh Goreim either. Okay, this is already a complex interrelationship between the two sugyas here in Chulin. It gets more complex with our raya, our question that we're going to ask in a moment. But in any event, it turns out, according to this, that Rebbe Eliezer holds, if one of them, if the father is not kosher, nonetheless the child is kosher. So he's saying Zev Zeh Goreim is mutter, and Rabbi Yeshua is saying Zev Zeh Goreim is usser. And the problem is that we know exactly the opposite. Very kosher, Here the question is whether, even though a treifa is usser for the mizbeach, how about where the mother is treifa and the father is tamim, and the child is also perfectly okay biologically? Is the fact that it comes from a treifa enough to assert for the mizbeach or not? So Rabbi Eliezer says it can't be brought on the mizbeach. Of course, there's a whole question over here about can a treifa have a vlad. So Gemara discusses that we had this back in the Eilat Treifas, and the question would be whether, according to the Ma'amar Yomar, the treifa is not yoledet. It would be talking about that the mother became a treifa while it was already pregnant, and there the issue is uber yerech imo, and not a din in the treifas per se. But again, let's not get involved in the details here. So it's clear that Rabbi Eliezer holds Zev Zeh Goreim is also there. And Rabbi Yoshua says, Yikarev l'gavim is be'aler. It's okay because Zev Zeh Goreim is mutter. Now I am really confused. No, Zev Zeh Goreim means only if you, Zev Zeh Goreim means even where you have two separate things, one of which goes from one of one isn't. Zev Zeh Goreim doesn't mean Zev Zeh Osir. It means when you have two elements that are required in a result, then it doesn't matter if one of them is no good, right? So Zev Zeh Goreim, if you have two separate things, even one of which only is bad, Rebbe Eliezer normally holds it Osir. Over here, we said there's a special reason that the Torah is going out of its way to be mad. Because if it meant what you said, and you were learning it from Sech Savim, you need to have both father and mother, I guess, why would it repeat se twice? The Pusik says Sech Savim se izim. Why doesn't the Pusik just write Sech Savim the izim? Because se lomale. Why does it repeat the word se for each one? To tell me that I don't really care. As long as it's a se mikol makom, even if it's got some elements of se, that would be enough. So that teaches Mishmamina semikol makom, but that's unique to this halacha. Whereas Rabbi Yoshua says, yes, and I hold just the opposite. Actually, on my own, I would have concluded that Zev Zeh Goreim is mutar the way that I hold by treifa. The problem is that over here, the Torah is insisting on genetic purity. Because it says over here, if you were right, then why doesn't it say, shor kesev va'eit? Why does it have to say ksavim
the Izim.
Hmm?
Because it wants both father and mother to be Ksavim. That's the point. So Shema Mina Ache Aviv Keves, V'imo Kivsa. And that's it. Okay, so that means that each of them looks at this case of Achila as being a unique case. But meanwhile, we don't know what Rabbi Shimon holds in terms of Miktat Simanim. Can we get back to that, please? Okay, yeah, Tashma. Here's our next right. Rabbi Shimon Omer. Okay, now here is Rabbi Shimon himself. That would be probably the best place for us to get information about Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says, Gamal, Gamal, Shnei Pa'amim. It says twice the word Gamal, as we saw. Vayikra and Devarim. One comes to tell me, this is exactly what Rabbi Shimon said before, but over here he's got some very crucial words that he adds. And over there we learned that Shechad Gamal Anolad Min HaGamal, V'yechad Gamal Anolad Min HaPara. In either case, we look at the animal in front of us. Does it look like a camel? It is a camel. I don't care what it is genetically. But Im Rosho V'Rubo, whoops, only if Rosho V'Rubo is Domele Imo Mutar B'Achila, now that is 100% Araya, there's no way to get around this. Shema Amina, that indeed Rabbi Shimon holds, that La Achila Nami, even the Gabi the Din of Achila, not only the Gabi the Din of Bechor, Rabbi Shimon would require to be Matir Rosho V'Rubo to be similar to its mother. Shema Amina, that conclusively proves it, which is precisely why we wanted to clarify before, where we seem to prove that Atana, who holds of Rabbi Shimon, doesn't agree with that, because there's really two separate issues here. There's the it etzem din of a nidme, is it kosher or not? And then there's this further halacha of, do you need Rosh of Aruba, or is mitzvah simonim itself kosher? And then the Mishnah concluded, hayotzei min ha-tamei tamei, hayotzei min ha-tohor tohor, which of course is not like Rabbi Shimon, but now let's get back to the normative halacha. So comes along now a shoel to ask from Reb Sheshet, what is the din of the kashrus of chamor urine? Meir aglam shel chamor mahu. Now we'll see later on that chamor urine was actually used as a cure for jaundice. So apparently they believed that it contained ingredients that would cure you of hepatitis and so on, and that would actually imbibe chamor urine. So the question is it kosher? Yeah.
Why are you asking me?
So, what's the din? It says, why are we talking about chamor urine? I mean, why not talk about horse urine or gamalim? No! What do you mean? Horses and camels, we do not look at urine as containing anything that is excreted by the chamor itself. It's basically just the medium, the water that it drinks is the medium for diluting waste products. That's not called an excretion of the animal. Of course that's kosher. It's nothing to do with the animal. And over there, I would never have asked. Lomi boilu. Look, you look at the urine. The urine is not particularly cloudy. It doesn't include any type of excretion. It's just waste product. So over there, we're not going to ask. We're going to think about it's like a milk. It's just water.
Isn't that what all urine is?
No. Wait a minute. So there I look at it as water in and water out. Maya, oh, maya, no. Okay. The fact that it's used to carry away waste is irrelevant. But kikami boilo, the chamor, look, there's something different about chamor urine, and that's what concerns us, because chamor urine is always thick and cloudy. Now, why is that? Does it excrete something into its urine? In which case, we'd have to view it like a milk. And the milk, we said, is osur. So, yotze min ha-tamei. So, since the chamor urine is achira, it's very cloudy, and in that sense, we could view it as being similar to milk, right? So, how do we understand what is happening? Is it actually excreting something into the urine? So, biguveko mimatzitzi, and it's osur? Or is it just also water in and water out, and it just happens to have a heck of a lot of additional waste products in its bloodstream because of just the way that it exerts itself? And it's a very physical kind of animal, and it just, the urine contains more waste. So maybe it's essentially water in and water out, maya all maya nafik. The reason that it looks so cloudy is because it's got a lot of havla de bisro. Look, it's just that, you know, the same way it sweats a lot it smells a lot, and it's just got a lot of waste products. Amalu Rav Sheshes says, look, It's clear from the way that the Mishnah puts it. And the Mishnah is coming there to give you a simon, to remember what it is that we're looking at over here. You'll note that the Mishnah, normally if you'd be speaking, you would have said, Hayotze mi tamei tamei, mi tahor tahor, right? Now, when you say Hayotze min hatamei tamei, and min hatahor tahor, that is a long version. And there's a reason for that long version. Because you might note, points out Reb Shesh, a fascinating thought, you might note that the gradations between me from, and min with a yud of the same type is a very interesting relationship. So what that means that me would be out of, min would be similar to, min would be the same species. So in other words, we look to an increasing level of comparisons when we use the word min. And the reason that the Mishnah puts it that way is gufa to tell me, look, you know, there are things that can be not precisely the thing, but are similar to it. And that's exactly this kind of case where you have a very cloudy urine and that's coming to tell me that it's osur. So notice Hayotze mitame loko ame. That's not what the Mishnah said. It said minhatame. And this is coming to be meramez on exactly your question. Because this too is minhatame. It's the same type of thing because it looks milky. It looks cloudy. Now others report that the issue had nothing to do with the cloudiness of the urine. The only reason that we mentioned the chamor as opposed to a susa and a gamal was because of the fact that the chamor urine has a market, where susim and gamalim does not. So ikidami susim and gamalim lokam iboilu, because nobody drinks that kind of thing, and therefore it's bichlal not considered to be roi. So lo shatuinch, what am I asking a shaylan? We're talking specifically about chamor, where over there people drink it because it's supposed to be a preventive for yarkuna. It's malalo yarkuna. So over there we asked what the din is, and it was there that Rav Shesha said, Tenitu ayotzi min hatamei tamei, ayotzi min hatahor tahor, vahani nami mitamei ka'atu. Now in this version, we're not distinguishing it. We're saying all types of urine, thick, not thick, and in this version. And of course, Rav Shesha didn't make his diuk of min and mit. He just said, look, the Mishnah is coming to tell me whatever is Yotzei, whatever is Yotzei includes even urine. Mitve. Mipnei ma amru dvash dvorim mutar. Ha? This is a very interesting point. The idea over here is that apparently it wasn't taken as an eno roila hila for refua. It was taken as a remezir to the vitamin question. You take vitamins on Shabbat. Malali arkuna means they would take this the way we take vitamins. So it was like it helped, but it was also preventative. So it was that people included it in their diet. That would be the point, but not that it would be viewed as an anorail lahila, and so on. So that would mean it's a type of food. If it's a type of food, then it wouldn't be considered to be refuah mamish on Shabbos either, Lord. But that's the whole question, whether a vitamin is part of your diet or not, or is it a strengthening pill, which is a refuah. And so many are not taking vitamins on Shabbos. It would be the same type of idea. No, that's the kasha. That's the exact question that we were asking here. Is it kosher? If it's not kosher, then this is not a good... Right.
Did they call it donkey urine?
Of course not. Yeah. They call it elixir.
Yeah. Okay. nobody calls... Nobody calls escargot snails, because otherwise nobody would eat it.
Yeah.
They call it escargot. It's like an element of
they definitely,
sophistication.
Gave, definitely gave it a French
name. French. Yeah, French. Yeah. Right. French.
Anyway. English, please, English.
What we say in the morning.
Yeah. To make it, they used to use meraglim as ammonia. Where else do you get ammonia? That's the best ammonia. You put meraglim away for 40 days, you got a fantastic cleaning. But that wasn't for eating, that was for process.
I remember in high school.
Nobody eats ammonia.
We read a story out of of soldiers in World War
I. Yeah, no, that's a different question. With people, for survival, whether there's any value in drinking your own
urine. No, they won't drink. They were soaked, they urinated on cloth and protected themselves from gas warfare. They used it as a mask against chemical in the war.
Okay, very good. All right. Always good to know, especially in modern days.
Yeah.
But, of course, the European Union has decided that we don't need to urinate anymore.
Excuse me?
Yep. Oh, my gosh. Yes, they banned putting on a bottle of water that water is good for preventing dehydration. That is against the law. You get 2 years in prison if you claim that water is useful for preventing dehydration. I have a problem with Rapshesha, because what Rapshesha just said is that even urine, even though it may be water in and water out, but it's coming from a tummy, it's usur. How do you explain the fact that you eat honey? So what are you going to say? Nectar in and nectar out. So it's coming from a bee. A bee is tummy. And here it says beferish. Mipnei ma amru dvash dvori mutar. Why is bee honey kosher? Because machnisototan legufan, they nematzototan megufan. Because they simply take in the sugars and they excrete those sugars, and they don't add anything of their own personal excretions, and therefore it's mutter, which was water in and water out, over here sugar in, sugar out, and you, Rapshesha, claim the water in, water out is no good. So then by the same token, so should honey be treif. Says the Gemara, he indeed would have held that honey is treif. The only reason that he says that honey is kosher is because he learns it from a special gzeirat hakatuv that the Torah was matir b'honey. And that is a completely different shita of the Tana of Rabbi Yaakov, and he's going according to that Tana, and therefore you can't ask on him from this braita. Because who the Amak Rabbi Yaakov? The Rabbi Yaakov says, look, when it comes to Duvsha, the Rachman Asharia, the Torah went out of its way with the gzeirat hakatuv to teach that honey is mutter. The Tanya. The Braita goes like this. Rabbi Yaakov Omer, Ach et ze tochlu mikol sheretz ha'ov ha'olech al arba. The only things you can eat from things that walk on four legs, and here it's talking about allowing you to eat chagavim. So he darshens, ze ata ochel. You can eat only this, but not a sheretz ha'ov that is tame.
What?
Come on. No. Sheretz ha'ov tame, I understand. I need a diak to tell you. That's crazy. It says beferish in the Torah, you can't eat a sheretz ha'ov that is tame. Sorry. Let me restate that. Ella, what we actually meant to learn was, Mihaikra, this is a different girsa, but it makes it clearer, because obviously this is what he's doing. Dichtiv, v'zeh asher lo tochlu, and that's the kol sheretz ha'of tamehu lachem, and this and only this, sheretz of tameh, only a sheretz of tameh iata ochel zeh. But you are allowed to eat that which comes out of a flying, remember, of just a flying object in Hebrew. What it gives off, which is edible, and what am I referring to? Dvash dvorim. Ah, so if that's the case, then dvash of gizim, which Tosfos learns is a kind of bird, or dvash of tsirin, other types of bugs that also secrete some nourishment for their young, should also be kosher. No, amrit lo. No, you can't do that. What do you mean you can't do that? Who says? Mara itel rabot dvarim, well, because you happen to like biani. I mean, what gives you the right to be marbe, dvash dvorim, and to exclude dvash gizin and tsirin? Ah, says Rabbi Yaakov. Marbe ani dvash dvorim she'in lo shem levai. Look, this particular type of honey, you'll note, is universally referred to as honey, not bee honey, because everybody takes stam honey as bee honey, and it doesn't therefore relate as strongly to the bee as the gizin and tsirin dvash always has to be defined as dvash gizin v'tsirin, which has a shem levai.
But when we say and honey,
we mean bee honey. So if that's the case, Rabbi Sheshes in Achinami follows the sheet of Rabbi Yaakov. You want to know what I would have said without the pasuk? I would have said it's usur. Why would have you said it's usur? Because even water in and water out is usur. That's why the Mishnah is telling me Yotzei Minat Tamei. Why then is the Biani kosher because of this? So Kaman also had the Tanya, and who would be the author of the following braita, where it says the dvash of gizin and tsirin is tohar. It's not makabel tuma, but it's also kosher to eat mutar ba'achila. That's clearly not like Rabbi Yaakov. Because when you say it's tar, you're telling me that it's not normally used as a foodstuff. So it requires makshav, right? Alma boy makshav. But it's clearly delok Rabbi Yaakov.
You mean hasvas?
No. Makshav. People don't usually eat it. It's two different issues. Mutter bachila, that's delok Rabbi Yaakov. that it's tar, that's because it got me the din of Tumah V'Tairah. Only foodstuffs are assumed. This is not a foodstuff. Until somebody's miyachid to eat it. Tanya nami achi. You know what? Take a look at the bride. Dvash bikavarato. You have honey in a hive. Still in the beehive. It's going to be makabel tumah. Why? Because it's called a foodstuff. It's tame, tumas ochlin, if it comes in contact with tumah. Even without a makshav. Nobody has to have a mind to eat it. Because min hastam, it's omed la'achila. And it's makabel tumah, as is. Obviously, it is a mashke, so it doesn't require additional hechsher. So there you go. Mashenken, other types of dvash, do require makshavah because they're not min hasam. They're not considered to be a type of foodstuff.
When we refer to Eretz Zavat Alavim dvash, we're saying that dvash is...
No, their dvash.
What we're talking about...
It's clearly they're referring to a product of the earth. So it's got to be the dvash of a priest. Okay, now, what in the heck the following Gemara is talking about? Unless you hang around wild animals, you will not have a clue, because we have never seen such thing as the chali of a yachmurta. Now, we don't even really know what a yachmurta is. The yachmurta is a female yachmur. The question is, what is a yachmur? So, some translate the yachmur as the roebuck, some translate the yachmur as a gazelle. I mean, the Torah lists the various, the ayal and the yachmur, they're all part of that same antelope type of family.
What's a roebuck?
The roebuck, and it has another name, Abe.
Well,
I mean, it's in South Africa, it's a roebuck. I think in other places, they give it a different name. All right, but that whole family, antelope, roebuck, springbuck, okay, so there's a lot of it's not clear. Reeboks. In any event, we're not quite sure. None of us here have an Uncle Art, but I'm sure that all it would say was a yachmur. That's what they do when they run into problems. Richie is out of range of email. Yeah. Okay, so in any event, anyway, it's one type of these gazelles. And what there's a machloket over here in the Rishonim, exactly what the choli, the word choli, usually is a reference to some sweet object or to some excretion, chalia. So it's an excretion. The choli, the yachmurta, some learn, is a gel-like substance that sometimes hangs from the vagina of the yachmurta. Others learn, like the Rabbeinu Gershon, that this is a gel substance that is found in the excrement of the yachmur. In any event, what in the world is this? Now that we're talking about the yachmur itself is kosher, the question is whether this female gel, this holly, is kosher or not. So, remarkably, what this gel looks like is a rounded shape, which the Rabbanon thought is somehow or other the testicles of the male that have gotten caught. This would be like the ultimate, revenge. It's one thing to eat, the male, like the mantis, but I mean, come on, to tear off his testicles. But anyway, that's what they thought. Some Rabbanon Meimar, that these are Beininu. And therefore, they're usher because they're Avri Menachai of the male. Kosher to eat. Omer of Safra. Safra says, no, actually, what this is, you'll never believe it, but this is gelled semen. And what happens is that the ayal, which is similar to the yachmur, they're all different, as I say, different families of gazelles. The problem is that the ayalah, as we know from other Gemaras, has got the tightest vagina in town, as everybody knows. So the poor ayal has got a really, really tough time copulating. And sometimes, after going for a long time without any relief, decides he's going to go after, instead of a nice-looking ayala, he's going to catch a yachmurta. Close enough. You guys don't even know the difference, so why couldn't I have one? This may be punishable in ayal court, and so on. But the humans haven't caught on to the idea yet. So what he does is he's been chasing this pretty ayalta to copulate with, but he can't get in because Rachmatzar. And because of that, he can't loam his daka, he's unable to copulate. He finally gives in after having built up a supply of semen that's enough for the next 20 years, and he's also bater yachmurta. So he finally deposits his whole load in a yachmurta. There's so much of this that it just actually, naturally, actually gels. In which case, it's kosher, if you enjoy that kind of stuff. Omer of Hun, which would actually explain why it would be called choli. No, this is very interesting. It's called choli because it's the only cells that are fruity. Actually, the only cells that contain fructose would be semen, sperm, because it's fruit. That's free. That's how we learn out orla from orla. That's where you do a brit milah and so on and so forth. Bokum shemotzi peirot. So this is called peirot. It still contains the same type of morphology and biology as fruit germ cells. Amr of Huda. Or haba keneged panav shel chamor. That is another interesting thing that we have to deal with in terms of kashrus. And that would be if a chamor is born. Now, the placental sac of a chamor is apparently quite thick. And oftentimes you have a chamor where its face is covered by this skin. And the question is that considered to be a living thing, or do we look at it as pure cheval? So this skin that covers the newborn. Yeah. So or haba keneged panav shel chamor is mutter. My taima. Here's Shabi Almu. This is just basically like eczema. I can prove it, because if we have a similar case where you have embryonic sacs of human, and the Adam may still have this newborn, may actually have or that is bar keneged panav. And then it doesn't matter whether it's alive or dead, the human is alive or dead. Ben chai, ben mate, the or is considered to be tohar. Now, I mean, I assume when you say ben chai, ben mate, that's a reference to whether that the human, meaning the child, or the human mother, which this was initially part of. In other words, you're saying ben hu chai v'imo chaya, or ben hu mate v'imo meta. It's irrelevant, because it's not part of a human, and therefore it's not metame. Well, I mean, that's an assumption. Maybe what it means is that whether the fetus lives and the mother dies, or whether the fetus dies and the mother lives. But maybe if both are dead, then we'd have to assume that it really is a part of a dead body, either mother or child, or some combination of the two. Ah, come on. There's another bright that says Beferish. Bein hu chai v'imo chaya, bein hu made v'imo meta. Okay, Tanya, all right, if it says so, I'm not going to argue with you. But you're right, so then it's a good raya. We see that this is not considered to be part of the living entity at all. We view it as just a waste product. Here's a waste product of birth, but it's not called part of the actual animal. So we've discussed quite a few of these strange situations, semen, urine, placenta pieces, or embryonic sacs, and this came all together with the Dvash and the question in our Mishnah by Yotei Mehatameh, and at Simon HaTahor, and Ali Ben Rabbanan, of course.
That's what we're saying. It's just Pirsha.
Now, just before we go on, I wanted to review a couple of issues that are really Nogel Aloha, and that is, what we've been speaking about over here is specifically the question of honey. Now, there are other things that bees actually manufacture. And the truth is that honey is very unique because honey isn't really even ingested fully by bees. What happens is that they have a little sac, and before it actually enters into the digestive tract, it's sits there. They keep regurgitating it and then once again eating. And each time it loses a little bit of the moisture content. And gradually, and this is a combined effort of a lot of bees together, what they do is, and when it finally reaches sufficiently concentrated stage, they actually start fanning it to get a lot of air moving over it after putting it into the hive before they seal it, and that way they make it the honey that we know, and the value of that is that bacteria can't develop in it. So it, once it's that level of concentration, doesn't have enough water content for bacteria to grow. That, by the way, is one of the reasons that we don't give honey to infants, because it often contains various bacterial spores that don't affect it while it's honey, but in the digestive tract of an infant, they actually start exploding and growing because the immune system is not as yet developed. And because of that, they can actually die from having honey. I mean, it's a small proportion of the cases, but it does happen. And that's why mothers are warned against giving honey to babes. It's also why there's no problem with the Medrash that talks about the rock that gave honey to the babies in Mitzrayim, the infants in Mitzrayim, because, of course, since that was Mycenaeum, it was totally honey. It didn't have anything else in it. So it's not that honey is dangerous. It's that spores are dangerous, including actually botulism. So in any event, but there are things that actually are generated by the bees, and that particularly what's called royal jelly is excreted from a little gland, and that royal jelly, actually most of the poskim hold, is certainly usher. By the way, it's not at all sweet. It's extremely bitter. It's very popular, very expensive, and supposedly has all these fantastic properties for fighting disease and so on. And it would appear that it's usher to eat, although in cases where you have a chayla and the doctors are claiming it's good and it's mixed, it's bottle b'shishim and so on. So, of course, in those cases, we're moderate. But there are other things, including, of course, the wax. Now, the wax actually does also come from specialized glands, and which afterwards it takes and grinds up and so on. And so over there, the reason that we say it's mutter b'achila, it says b'feirish in the Mishnah, actually it's Mishnah v'ezor, that it's mutter b'achila, is gufa because, the way Shlomo Zalman explained it, is gufa because it isn't food. It's simply a matrix for food. And so therefore, what you're really doing is like you're sucking on a stone that was covered with honey, with sugar, you know. So it's just basically like a stone. And therefore, if that's the case, it's not considered to be a foodstuff at all and isn't nogea. There's also, of course, this famous propolis, and it's a type of antibiotic material that is actually collected by bees from various parts of trees and flowers. And it's used, mixed with the wax in nature. The bee mixes it with the wax. And the point of that is, remarkably, it prevents the growth of fungi and bacteria in the hive, and actually is very, very useful for preserving the health of the hive. And that is something that is actually pretty popular, particularly in alternative medicine. And because of that, it's important to determine what the halacha is. And there, too, we're talking about something that has absolutely no connection to anything in the body of the bee. It is merely a collection of the bee. Because of that, it, too, should be aser, a mutter, exactly like the honey itself. Hashma, beimat ora, shielda min beimat meya, asur ba'achila. ואם דומה ראש ורובו לאימו, חייב בבחורה, שמוע מן האכילה, נעמי בוי רבי שמעון ראש ורובו, what are you talking about? On the contrary, לבחורה דווקא, דקן נעמי, כשופקה לאכילה, and all of a sudden we start talking about הבחורה, שמוע מן הלבחורה, הוא דבוי רבי שמעון ראש ורובו, but indeed for אכילה, you can get away without ראש ורובו. No. נעולם אימי לך לאכילה נעמי, I mean, yes, it's a little difficult, but maybe, לאכילה נעמי בוי, and Bechora is coming to tell me a chiddush that it's enough to have Rosh Hashanah. It's a kasak that hamida. Hoyel v'chtiv ach Bechor shor, from which we learned Achi hu shor, u Bechoro shor, and therefore it shouldn't even be enough to have Rosh Hashanah. Adi ikakulo, gomash melon that it's enough Rosh Hashanah. Toshma. Ach et ze lo tochlu mimale agira, umimafrise haparasa, et agamal. So what it's saying is, ze iatoche, kini agamal. But you could eat what looks like a gamal, but not completely. It's baba simen echad, referring to what? Vezes at baba simen echad, where it looks like a gamal, but its mother is kosher, and its father was also kosher, iburo menat tahor. Now, you might think that this would be true, even, says Rabbi Yeshua, if the father was Tamei. No. Talmud Lomar, Seksavim. Notice it uses the Lashon plural. It's got to be a seh that comes from two ksavim, or seh that comes from two izim. So in other words, the father and mother have to both be kvasim or izim for the child to be kosher if it's a mutation and bears some resemblance to the mother. Give me Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Eliezer, come on, the pasuk isn't coming to tell me something that I know is already mutter. Lo ba'katuv la'atir ta mutar. On the contrary, it's coming to be mosif ala mutar. And what is that referring to? That's referring to a tome that is nola minator, even though the father was tome. Really? Might it only refer to a case where iburo minator? No, that's what it's coming to be matir. Talmud lomar, se ksavim, se izim. Now that, it's bikomakom, koreila. That's the idea. Mikomakom. So that is se, no matter what. As long as it's a se, it doesn't matter whether both parents were se or not. Anyway, Koriela Tame. Now look, the Braita refers to Tame, that is Nolad Menat Tohor, and that is clearly going like Rabbi Shimon. And it starts off right off the bat by saying, Avla Tohor Chela Babesiman Echad, okay? Well, Haitana Sovela Kavati Bechoda, as far as Gamal, Asering, a Nidma, but Polagale Bechoda, as far as Rosh Ovaruba. Ikadamakshu motive, this Braita. Iburo min hatame, what are you talking about? Mima Abra? V'omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, li'olam ein mitaberet lo tmeya min hatohor, v'lo tohara min hatame, v'lo gasa min hadaka, v'lo daka min hagasa, and even not beima min hachaya or chaya min habeima, unless for this last bit, you hold of those like Rebbe Eliezer and those who follow the general approach but argue in details. We're over there, they talked about a koi, and they held that a chaya is mitaberet bebeima. And now Rabbi Yirmiyah explained, well, obviously it doesn't mean really tamei, because that's not possible. It means genetically a tahor, but visually a tamei. So that would be a kalut ben para. And of course, it's going out, leave it to Rabbi Shimon Kama, right? And nonetheless, it says, boom, there's your proof. Yes, but here too. Haitana sovala kavati bechoda, upolagale bechoda. So, but I mean, what it boils down to is that Rabbi Eliezer is saying that even if the father is not kosher, the child is kosher. So in other words, he's telling you Zevizagorem is mutar. And what Rabbi Yeshua is saying is that Zevizagorem is asur, but the yipcheshamin alohu. Vlad shreifa, Rabbi Eliezer, lo yikarev legabi misbeah. Rabbi Yeshua, yikarev legabi misbeah. Well, it's true that Biyamas of Rabbi Eliezer Zevizagorem asur. But this is a unique case, because that's why it says se, because in Cain lema cross six of him easy. Why repeat se? Lomali shmamina se mikomakom. Rabbi Yeshua Omelacha. Actually, Bialma Zevizagorem is normally mutter, I hold. But this case is unique, because why does it say ksavim? Let it say shor kesef eis. Why does it say ksavim vizim? Lomali shmamina achea viv keves vimo kipsa. Toshma. Okay, getting back to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon Omer Gamal, Shnei Pamim, Echad Gamal Nolad Ben HaGamal, Echad Gamal Nolad Ben HaPara. Now this we already knew, but dig this new piece. V'im Roshov V'rubo, Domeh Limo Mutar B'Achila. Whoops! Shema Mina, that L'Achila Nami, boy Rabbi Shimon, Roshov V'rubo, Shema Mina, this conclusively proves it. She'aya Tzei Mina Tamei Tamei, and so on. What Mina Rav Sheshes? Meraglayim shall chamor mahu. Why are we talking about meraglayim of a chamor? Tiboyle susim gemolim. Susim gemolim. Nah, that's ridiculous. Let me buy that. Because they are lo achire, lo domu lechalav. It's clear water in and water out. My all, my enough. Kikam biboyle the chamor. The urine of the chamor is achire, and it's domu lechalav. So my. Do we say migufe ka mimtzi? The Assyria, the my all, my enough. The only reason that's here is because there's more waste products And it's Havo de Bisru. Amolo Rosheshes Tiritua. Shayotse Minatame Tame. Ayotse Minator Tor. It doesn't say Mitame Lokomar. It says Minatame. Why do you think it's saying that? To talk about this kind of Chamor urine. Mina de Tameu. Actually, Ikidi Amre, that the question was true about Sisyphus Gemalim, also, except we didn't mention it, look at me, like, only because nobody uses it. The lo shatu inche. So, kikam we boil the chamor, because they're shatu inche, because it's malul yarkun, amai. To which Rav Sheshes said, tenitua, hayotze bin atame tame, hayotze bin atar tohor, and this is also mitame kahatu, and here we don't make the deal. According to which, we've got a problem. Meitve, why is Dvash Dvarim mutar? Because it's nectar in and nectar out. But I thought, according to Rav Sheshes, even water in and water out is awesome. Ah, true. But Rav Sheshes holds that Dvash is mutar because of Rav Yaakov. Do you kiryom Rav Yaakov? Dufsha, Rachmana Shariz Gizaret HaKatuv. The Tanya Rabbi Yaakov Amir At Achet Zetochlu Mikol Sheretz Of Zeta Ochel Viat Ochel Sheretz Of Tamei. What are you talking about? Sheretz Of Tamei. That's a French pasuk. Sorry. I mean to be medayik the other pasuk. Ze Asher Lo Tochlu, and therefore it's saying only Sheretz Of Tamei Yat Ochel. Aval At Ochel Basha Of Tamei Mashritz. And what am I referring to? I'm referring to Dvash Dvorim. And Yochol Av Dvash HaGizin and Dvash HaTzirin. No. What do you mean, Amrit, lo? Why? Mara itel rabot Dvash Dvorim. Ulo tzi gizin v'tzirin. Marbe ani Dvash Dvorim she'en lo shem levai. Botzi ani Dvash gizin v'tzirin she'esh lo shem levai. Come on, Nazar d'tanya, Dvash HaGizin v'tzirin is actually mutter. And it's tahar from Tumah, it's mutar b'achila, clearly the Lord Rabbi Yaakov. And it's tahar, why? Because it's boi machshava. Tani nami achi, when it comes to real dvash, dvash b'kavarato is metame tumat ochlim, shelo b'machshava. The choli of a yach murta, sever Rabban Olameimar, well, those are testicles, and they're usher. Omrev safran, oh, silly. It's zara de ayalahu, which is chasing an ayalta, and never is able to copulate rachmat sar lo mistakaka, also baso yachmurta v'natre. Omre v'na or haba k'neget panav shochamon mutar. My time, it's just pure shabiyamu. Omre la rafchista, that's clearly the case, because otherwise it would be metamit tumat meit. And it says beferesh, that in the case of a human, the or haba k'neget panav shaladam, ben chai ben meit is tahor from tumat meit. And I assume it says ben chayim ben meit. It's referring both to the flood and to the mother. In other words, my love ben hu chay v'imo chaya, ben hu meit v'imo meita. Well, maybe not. Maybe it's ben hu chay v'imo meita, ben hu meit v'imo chaya. No, it says beferish, not like that. V'tanya ben hu chay v'imo chaya, ben hu meit v'imo meita. Okay, Tanya.